This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Barack Obama schools America on race relations, but how did voters take to his message? And Republican nominee John McCain gives his report from the ground in Iraq. For today's political news, we have Dr. Mary Frances Berry. She's a professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania and the former chair of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission. And Robert Trainum, D.C. bureau chief for the Comcast cable network CN8. Hi, folks.
Hi, Farai.
Hello.
So this is the ripple time. I mean, this speech definitely, everyone has an opinion. Probably people who haven't even heard it have an opinion. So let me start with you, Mary. What's your opinion, not just of the speech, but how you think it's going to be received?
Well, first, let me just say, I think the speech is technically a genius category, whoever wrote it and put it together and all that. It has great intellectual appeal. I think people who are intellectuals and people who are thoughtful will remain impressed, and people who really liked Obama before he gave the speech will continue to like him. And he can do no wrong. But I think that people who are a little skeptical or who may not be as intellectual and thoughtful and understand what they mean by having a dialogue about these issues may wonder why he didn't talk about the foreign policy gaffes, if you can call them that, perspectives that Reverend Wright had and didn't mention any of that and chose just to talk about the race issue. And whether he intends to continue to, although I've heard him say that he doesn't intend to. So I think it'll play very well with the people who really like Obama, and they will be reinforced. I think the people who will wonder if there's something else about him we don't know will continue to ask that question, and we'll just see how it plays out in the polling data.
Robert, some new polls are showing that Senator Obama's lead over Senator Clinton has eroded. Do you think it's as a result of the Jeremiah Wright issue, the issues of his pastor's words?
Yes, it's two reasons. First and foremost, purely from a political standpoint, Farai, the speech had to be given yesterday. And the reason why is because the Obama campaign saw their approval ratings in a free-for-all. This time last week, Barack Obama's approval ratings were about 52%. This time yesterday, they were about 46, 47%. So they recognize that their numbers were going down further and further and further the more the media talked about Reverend Wright's comments. The question becomes, and I agree with Mary, as to whether or not Senator Obama was able to reach across the aisle, so to speak, and speak to members out there of the voting bloc that are frightened, candidly speaking, by Reverend Wright's comments, that are intimidated by those comments, that are offended by those comments. And I'm not sure Senator Obama was able to do that. Mary is absolutely right. In terms of Senator Obama's base, the people out there that love him, the people that lay palms at his feet in these coliseums, they love the speech. But when you take a look at the average white individual out there who may live in a battleground state, whether it be Michigan or Pennsylvania, which has its primary on April 22nd, or Florida, I'm not exactly sure Senator Obama was able to reach to that person.
Mary, let's talk a little bit about Pennsylvania. There, you know, in some ways it's similar to Ohio. It definitely, you know, is contiguous to Ohio, but more than just geography, there's the whole question of a state that has black folks, white ethnics, immigrants, this sort of soup of American society, and has a lot of issues around what does it mean to be a working class person in America in this time of economic turbulence. Do you think that in addition to all of the racial issues that Senator Obama has a high mark to hit in Pennsylvania, which is where he gave a speech?
Well, Pennsylvania is unlike Ohio in that the economy isn't quite as bad. Industrialization has taken its toll there, but there's been a great deal of revival, for example, in the Pittsburgh area. And Pennsylvania really is sort of like two states, someone famously said. You've got Philadelphia with its large black population, and then you've got diversity, lots of it everywhere else, and not as many black folk. So I would think that Obama is going to have the same work cut out for him that he had cut out for him in Ohio on the economy and dealing with white males, for example, and dealing with people who are either unemployed or in low-wage jobs and dealing with all the economic issues. We're in a recession now, I heard an economist say, so I guess I can say it too. We're now in a recession. And so he'll have to deal with all that. And I think the race speech that he gave yesterday doesn't address any of those concerns that people have, and I don't think it will displace any of those concerns. He's likely to end up, if nothing else happens, winning the Philadelphia area, the black vote there, coming short elsewhere in the state, and he's likely to lose, in my opinion, Pennsylvania.
Fry, may I chime in?
Please.
You know, I'm from Pennsylvania, and having worked on certain or several campaigns in Pennsylvania, I know something about that state. You know, with 12 million people in the state, Mary's absolutely right. You know, you have Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, and you have Alabama in the middle, as James Carville said back in 1994. And what's interesting about Pennsylvania is that it is a huge manufacturing state, a very blue-collar state. We like to say in Pennsylvania, we still make things in Pennsylvania. And unlike Ohio, you know, as Mary said before, the economy is humming along a little bit at a better clip than in Ohio, but specifically to Pennsylvania and Senator Obama. Senator Obama most likely will win Philadelphia and the collar counties just outside of Philadelphia. There are about 200,000 to 300,000 African Americans in the city of Philadelphia alone, or if not more. And in fact, they probably will all go with go with Senator Obama. The real question is whether or not he is able to pick up some cities such as Erie, Pittsburgh, Scranton, Altoona, and Johnstown. And I don't think that's likely. I think Senator Clinton probably will win the state. She most likely will win the state probably by 3 or 4 points. And if, in fact, she does win Pennsylvania, which has about 126 delegates, she is back in this game big time.
Well, the only place where the right thing may play in is on some of the university and college campuses where students who are Obama students and are working very hard have some serious questions about some of the things he said on foreign policy, worrying about his commitment to the state of Israel, for example, and the whole Middle East thing. If any of that has any impact, it may do something to sort of dampen his expected college-age youth vote, which might give Clinton a larger margin.
I want to move on to Senator Hillary Clinton. She gave her own speech, this one on the Iraq War. This was yesterday. Let's listen to what she had to say.
The mistakes in Iraq are not the responsibility of our men and women in uniform, but of their commander-in-chief. From the decision to rush to war without allowing the weapons inspectors to finish their work, to the failure to send enough troops and provide proper equipment for them, to the denial of the existence of a rising insurgency and the failure to adjust the military strategy.
As you know, I mean, this is the fifth anniversary of the war.
Yes.
What I'm wondering, I'll go to you first, Mary, and then Robert. Is Senator Clinton at anything of a disadvantage with voters who are opposed to the war? You know, that's one of the distinctions that Senator Obama has tried to make, that she supported it, I didn't. Does that matter to Democratic voters? And then, is this really an advantage for the Democrats in the fall that public opinion is generally against the war?
There has been an erosion in the number of people who are opposed to Senator Clinton because of the war issue, as her position has come closer to that of Obama. And she talks, too, about getting troops out within 60 days, although she walks a very fine line. Also, Senator Obama's point he keeps making about the speech that he made and showed good judgment has been somewhat eroded by all the talk about his judgment around the right issue. And American public opinion on the war has become less negative than it was before, given the surge that has taken place and the arguments about is it successful or not. And you can argue all day long that it really isn't because the politics haven't changed, but in terms of the level of violence there. So I think that Clinton still has possibly to gain support from people without worrying too much about the war, except in some quarters. And she's probably better positioned than Obama is on the war issue for a general election campaign against McCain. Of course, she'd have to get nominated first. That's important. But she's better positioned than he is, and she's always been better positioned than he has been on that question.
You know, Farai, I have to take issue with the soundbite that you played of Senator Clinton yesterday. And the reason why is because what she said was very eloquent, however, somewhat disingenuous. Here's why. Not only did she vote for authorization of the war 5 years ago, but she also serves on the Armed Services Committee. And if, in fact, she felt very strongly about the issues of malnourishment with the troops as it relates to equipment and so forth, she had a very, or she does, still currently still has, a very powerful position on the Armed Services Committee to make hay about that. And if, in fact, she is doing that now, that's fabulous. But she should have done it over the past 5 years when she had the position to do so.
Well, Robert, you should be aware, and I just happen to know this because I checked it before we came over, she has been one of the leaders on the committee for trying to get improvement in the conditions for the troops, their material support, all these issues about whether they had the right vests or the right Humvees or whatever these military things are. She's been a leader on that. I think it's because she's got a whole bunch of troops out of Fort Drum up in New York. That's a New York state issue, not necessarily for the presidential race. So on that, she's talked about that. But as for voting for the war, too, I think in all fairness, we should say that most of the Democrats voted for the war. I mean, every time we say that, it's as if she, and Obama, of course, was not in the Senate at the time. So I don't think she gets home free, and many of the people who are anti-war and that's the number one issue for them will still be opposed to her. And they will be opposed to her in Pennsylvania and everywhere else. But I do think her record is at best is mixed at worst.
Well, let me just reintroduce what we're doing for anyone who is just tuning in. This is NPR's News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. You're hearing from Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, former chair of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission, Robert Trainum, D.C. bureau chief for the Comcast cable network CNN, and we are talking what else politics, talking Iraq, and let's talk a little bit about John McCain. He's been in the Middle East this week. He says the surge is working. The U.S. military has made significant progress. He also said that, quote, Al-Qaeda is going back into Iran and is receiving training. And, you know, then he basically said, no, wait, you know, that's not really what I meant to say. You know, let me start with you, Robert. Was that a significant blunder or just something in passing? He is, of course, the man who has sung Bomb Iran to the tune of Barbara Ann. But
Yes, to answer your question, it is a pretty significant gaffe. There's no question about it. We should also mention that as soon as he said those words, his Democrat/independent colleague, Senator Joseph Lieberman from Connecticut, whispered in his ear, and he very quickly changed his tune. Look, Senator McCain has spent his whole life in foreign policy. There's no question about it. I don't think anyone would question his foreign policy credentials. He made a mistake. He admitted the mistake and very quickly moved on for it. But I think this is a bigger issue for I, and that is that here you have, here at home, the Democrats literally infighting over race, over superdelegates, over the convention, about, you know, the recount in Michigan or in Florida. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. And here you have the Republican nominee who has already been coronated, so to speak, traveling around the world to the Middle East, meeting with foreign leaders, meeting with the President of the United States, again, highlighting all of his foreign policy credentials, looking very presidential, raising a lot of money. This is John McCain's dream right now. And candidly speaking, this is the political operative's dream on the Republican side, because the contrast could not be any better.
And I think Robert is exactly right. The Democrats, some days I think Democrats are deliberately trying to shoot themselves in the foot, that somehow they have this wish that it looks like we're going to win. What can we do to keep from winning? Whether it's Florida and Michigan, and worrying about, talking about people, operatives, people who are higher up who make decisions, making bad ones and other people suffering. You've got all those people who decided to have the primary in Florida. It wasn't the little people who decided that. All they did was to go out and vote. And now you have all these folks saying, well, that's just too bad. They'll be disenfranchised. I even heard the Democrats say, we don't need them in November.
Let me jump in because this is something that really, we don't have a lot of time to discuss it, but just what the heck is going to happen? You know, it looks as if there's not going to be a revote in Florida. So either Hillary Clinton is going to get the lion's share of you know, if they seat the delegates, although there's, you know, arguments about whether or not it was really a fair fight, given that it was pushed up.
Her name was only on the ballot.
Yeah, exactly.
That's Michigan, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, no. Yes, in Florida, she was not the only person on the ballot, correct?
Everybody was on the ballot.
Everyone was on the ballot, but she won.
She won,
and there's some questions, I think, about whether or not a revote would actually favor Obama, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen. Is that a good or a bad thing? Are they just going to, what are they going to do, the party?
I think the Obama people are making a mistake. by not coming out very strongly in favor of having a revote. If they had a revote, they'd probably win, in my opinion. But that's just my opinion. But they're, you know, behind the scenes making noises about, you know, why not have a don't have a revote. I guess they don't want to risk the possibility that a few more delegates might dribble in. But when you start disenfranchising people, and you can call it anything you want to call it because of some decisions higher ups made, you really do leave a lot of people angry. You leave a lot of people with a bad taste in their mouth. They're setting themselves up so that their convention can be, you know, as we've said, a bloodbath.
As messy as possible.
It's going to be one
America big circus.
Can watch it. You know,
right.
That's what they're doing.
You know, Fry, very quickly, you know, 8 years ago, didn't we talk about this? I mean, this is like deja vu all over again. But what's interesting about this is that the Republicans at that time did not want a recount. The Democrats wanted a recount. And fast forward to 2008 now, Barack Obama does not want a recount. I mean, the whole thing is just one big circus that the Democrats are literally chasing their tails around. And here you have John McCain literally traveling around the country being the global statesman.
Yeah. All right. Well, one final question very quickly. Do you think that the Democrats, Democratic Party leader, and I'm going to have to throw this to you, Mary, very quickly. Do you think that the Democratic Party leaders will step in and unify some of what's going on?
I have no idea. When Roger Wilkins and I wrote to Howard Dean several weeks ago about the Florida-Michigan thing, you know, all I got back was mouthings about, oh, well, we'll work it out before the convention. All I've seen him do on TV, he hasn't shown any real leadership on this issue. So I don't know why he doesn't step up. They said that the revote in Michigan would be okay, the DNC has, but he ought to push that. I don't think they will. I think that what we're headed for is a big mess, and it'll just drag on, and people will tell themselves, oh, well, it'll work itself out in the end, and it won't.
All right. On that note, cheerful note, question mark, question mark, question mark. Mary and Robert, thanks so much.
Thanks, Farai. Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point.
Exactly. That was Mary Frances Berry, a professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania and the former chair of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission, and Robert Tranum, Washington, D.C. Bureau Chief for the Comcast Cable Network CN8. Both joined us from our studios in Washington, D.C.